watch the river flow.
Bob may be sitting here watching the river flow. I'm sitting in a radio studio watching the meters glow, and I'm Chris.
That was terrible. Is that the best Dylan song you could think of to start the hour with?
That's a classic Dylan number.
That was terrible.
Produced by Leon Russell, right?
Yeah. Sounded like Mike Bloomfield on guitar, but we can't be sure.
And that bonehead is Rob, and together we are the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
The guitar sounded hot, but it was just terrible.
Bob Dylan will be a featured artist at a concert next month in Bologna, Italy. Is that Bologna or Bologna?
I don't know.
I don't know how you say it. If you're Italian, you say Bologna. And Bob will be performing at the World Eucharistic Congress. You know what that means?
No.
It means he's playing in front of the Pope. I don't think he's going to play his guitar with his feet, though. But Bob will be playing for the Pope John Paul II as the guest of honor for this event called the World Eucharistic Congress. And organizers say that the event will give the Pope a chance to meet young people. Bob's not that young anymore.
I think this will be the first time that a Jewish guy has entertained the Pope since he caught Dice Clay's act at Madison Square Garden.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show talking about Uncle Bob Dylan. The phone lines are open at 749-1444. That number again, 7491-444. And Glenn is calling us from Bowling Green, Ohio. Hello, Glenn.
Hi, Chris. Actually, you called me.
Well, what's going on, Glenn? You're going to tell us a little bit about your feelings about...
Gee whiz.
What, gee whiz, what?
Oh, did I blow the illusion for you guys?
That's all right.
Sorry about that.
You know that radio is theater of the mind, and we're trying to create a little here.
I see. Well, that's fine. I heard you play some Bob there for us.
Yeah, Watching the River Flow. What do you think of that song?
1973, I think.
Why do you think Rob doesn't like that number?
I don't know. Can't speak for Rob, but... It's like a hat that John Candy wears. It angers a lot of people, that song. Just the sight of it, or just the sound of it.
Glenn, what do you think of Bob Dylan playing for the Pope? I mean, Bob's religion has been a little enigmatic over the years. He started out as, when he first came out, nobody knew that he was anything except for a Jewish kid from Minnesota who went to New York to strike the big time in the folk circuit. Next thing you know, he's singing songs about St. Augustine and Moses. Next thing you know, after that, he was saved in the late 70s.
That's pretty much a nice condensed version of it, all right. He comes from a very, very strong Jewish family with a very, very devout Jewish grandfather as a big part of his growing up years. And the time you're talking about with his conversion to Christianity, I think that's what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Late 1978, early 1979 was a really big part of that for him. The guy you want to look at, actually, as the guy who pointed him in the direction of the cross, so to speak, would be T-Bone Burnett.
Oh, really?
Who was on the Street Legal tour.
T-Bone Burnett is a born-again Christian?
Yeah. I'm not sure what his, you know, current status on Jesus roster is, but T-Bone Burnett was a real, really big Christian influence on Dylan in the late 70s. He was on the tour for the album called Street Legal in 78, and at the end of that tour, Dylan pretty much found himself alone. He was divorced not long from his wife Sarah, and
if he had any sense, he hates
under
Jacob.
The influence. I'm sorry.
And if he has any sense, he hates Jacob.
What's that? He hates Jacob.
Yeah, if he has any sense, he hates Jacob, so he didn't want to talk to him.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that could be.
You mean Jacob Dylan from the Wallflowers?
And I assume that's who you're talking about.
What do you got against Jacob, Rob? He's a good-looking guy, sings songs about Josephine.
He's weak.
Yeah, well, I'll get to the point. I'll cut to the chase for you here. As a result of his conversion to Christianity, he spent 3.5 weeks in a Bible school in Southern California and emerged with an album which you might remember called Slow Train Coming, 1979, which actually earned a Grammy Award. In the 1980 Grammy Awards.
A lot of people think that Bob Dylan disappeared in the late 70s and early 80s, but he was there all right.
Yeah, he did three records which are considered his Christian trilogy. Slow Train Coming and an album called Saved, which is the most deeply religious and probably the weakest of the three. And then an album that has a lot of Christian songs on it, but also features Ron Wood. I thought it was kind of strange. Called Shot of Love. It's a very good album.
Ringo Starr and Russ Kunkel are on it, too.
Yeah, Ringo's on there. That's right. That's a very good record. And all those records, especially Slow Train Coming, are the, some of the best produced Dylan albums ever. He had never really let a producer tell him what to do until, for some reason, Flow Train Coming record, which is kind of odd. I mean, for he lets God tell him what to do, and also producers for the first time. So there's a, you know, musically they're not bad records, but you have to really be. He was kind of preaching to the converted. He went out on big tours and expected all of his fans to kind of jump on the bandwagon, and he was, I'm afraid, sorely disappointed about that. Although a lot of Christians bought Bob Dylan records for the first time. How many of them have purchased them since, I really couldn't tell you.
Now, but after that trilogy of records, Bob Dylan went back to a more secular-oriented lyric again with the record Infidels and all the records that came out since then. And a lot of his Christian converted fans had thought that Bob had given up his Christianity. But even though he's enigmatic and he doesn't give interviews and I don't really know what's going on in Bob's head, where did he go with God after those three records?
It's kind of hard to say. You know, he sort of returned to his Jewish roots. I remember that in 1987, he played Israel. And I think it's the first time he's played there in a very long time, if not the first time ever. But he played some really large concerts in large cities in Israel. And I remember seeing pictures of him at the Wailing Wall, which I guess is in Jerusalem. I don't know a lot about
Judaism. Right, he was sporting the yarmulke and everything, wasn't he?
Yeah, you remember it better than I do.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Exactly right. And so apparently he had returned to, you know, his Judaic roots, I suppose. As where he stands today, I don't know. Your listeners might have guessed, I follow Dylan like some people follow a baseball team. I haven't had a chance to see him this year. I was, like everybody, a little concerned when he was in the hospital in early June, and I thought that a lot of his concerts would be canceled, but apparently something, probably the almighty dollar, got him out of that hospital bed.
Or maybe the almighty God did.
Well, maybe. He hasn't made any mention of it. I will say this, though. I mean, people, you know, this thing about him playing with the Pope and things like that, you can follow this sort of religious path as one offshoot of his career, if you like. But if you, which is pretty weird, I grant you, but if you look at any particular division of his career, it's pretty weird. The guy just takes left turns every time you turn around.
That's the Bob Dylan way.
Yeah, I suppose. But he doesn't seem to hurt anybody.
He's been like that ever since he went electric at the Newport Folk Festival.
Yeah, I mean, he'll do that 1 minute, which will, you know, revolutionize, you know, music in a lot of ways. That's a milestone in anybody's book, I would think, whether you like him or not. And then he'll turn around and make, you know, some pathetically poor records or, you know, really awful ventures into film, things like that are just, you really leave you shaking your head. The most reliable part of his career, though, for me, is seeing him live. I saw him last summer's tour and thought that the last show I saw in Detroit was maybe the best Bob Dylan concert I've ever seen. Lately, he has a really, really good band. And that can play anything from his catalog, and he's willing to play just about anything from his catalog and yet play crowd pleasers.
Is he taking requests like Barry Manilow's doing on VH1?
I haven't noticed that at any of the shows I've been at. No, I haven't.
Oh,
but
God,
I will say
cheesy.
This, that, you know, with the Grateful Dead, you know, retired, a lot of that audience with nothing better to do in the summers but drive around seemed to follow Dylan.
I thought most of those people moved back into their parents' basements.
They got to go someplace when they're not out seeing him, I guess. But at any rate, I've noticed that big change in the crowds, and as a result of that, I think he is playing a little hotter because the crowds are more, they aren't just curious, they seem to know his songs really well. So,
you were talking for a minute ago about how Bob has changed the history of the path of music, especially when he went electric back in the 60s. But do you think that his conversion into Christianity in 78 and 79 had anything to do with how rock and roll progressed after him?
Oh, that's an interesting point.
I mean, you might say no, because religion is so fringe, you know?
You know, most people turn to religion in kind of a desperate hour, at least that's in my experience. And the Street Legal album didn't do particularly well.
Oh, that's an awful record.
It was a highly touted Dylan record at the time, too. And the tour was a little sluggish. It was a little before my time as a Dylan fan. I do remember the album being released and then not really caring for it that much then. It was kind of a conventional record in a lot of ways, and it just didn't do much for him. And CBS put a lot of money into it. And I guess the tour was a real downer. And like I said, I think it was the end of 1978. I think December is when that tour finished. And that's when he found himself, you know, as I mentioned earlier, divorced and kind of with a lot of port in a storm. That kind of a person is the most likely person to be set upon by someone who's, you know, pushing a religion. The other thing you might not know about that period of time, too, and this is something pretty common, too. After T-Bone Burnett had sort of mentioned you know, his relationship with Christ a lot around Dylan, it was soon after that that Dylan claims to have had a religious experience in which the entire room moved that he was in, by a room he was in by himself, and he felt this spirit of the Lord or whatever.
Are you sure he wasn't just stoned?
Well, like I said, I wasn't there.
Bob's
this is
been
what,
known to partake.
Yeah, this is what he claimed to be the big thing. He mentioned this to a few friends, and he was quickly you know, ushered into their local religion by some people who ran a small ministry in Southern California. And I don't pretend to, you know, take any sort of stand one way or the other. If people are interested in religion or Christianity or whatever, that's their business. I remember reading about it in Rolling Stone and being really interested in his career because of that, because he wasn't doing anything. It seemed like he was going nowhere at that point in time. And there was Rolling Stone mentioned that, I remember, in an article where they just had a picture of Bob getting gas at a gas station in a station wagon, and somebody traced the plates of this station wagon or something and found that it belonged to this, you know, this Bible study. And next thing you know, he's making a religious record. So if you don't like those records, that's fine, but the ones that came right after it were quite good. Infidels and some of the other tours that followed, they were really, really some of his best work, I thought. And so when he does something screwy, or what might be considered screwy by what we expect of him, usually the next thing after it is pretty cool. I thought Infidels was one of his best records yet.
Why do you think so many people stalk Bob Dylan?
Which is released in 1984, by the way, and it's not a Christian record. But anyway, I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you, why do you think so many people stalk Bob Dylan? You may have heard of a cat named A.J. Weberman who digs through Dylan's garbage and then publishes what he finds.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, he came along at a time in the 60s when, you know, there was a big revolution in what was going on socially, and a lot of people see him as one of the kind of accidental architects of that taking place.
Yeah, but if you ask Bob will say to you, "Hey, I'm just a singer. I just do nothing sing songs.
Yeah.
Why are you taking my word for so much?" You know,
that's a really easy out. You know, there's a couple different common Dylan responses to things like that. A, the songs just come through me. I just let them happen as they hit me, and which makes himself sort of a conduit. He's sort of passive about it. And another thing he often says is, "I'm not any different than I was 30 years ago or so. I'm the same person." So, well, that's, you know, from our point of view as an audience, that's a lot of baloney. And if he was the same as he was 30 or 40 years ago, however long it was when he went to New York City, like late 50s, early 60s, you know, it's not very interesting if that were the case. So, you know, he's not really good at explaining himself. And this is another reason why people are fascinated with him. But from my point of view, I've never thought of myself as there are Dylan maniacs and junkies out there, which I would be sort of second class, I suppose. But I just really, really think that if you're looking for somebody with a lot of good songs and a back catalog that's worth exploring, then you're not going to have to go much farther than him. And it can be aggravating at times, but it's never boring.
Glenn calling from Bowling Green, Ohio. Thank you for your comments this evening.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon, and hey, maybe Bob will have a new album out one of these days.
Yeah, that would be a treat. He hasn't had a record out in about a bit of new material in about 8 years, I think. And that
8
was another,
years?
Yeah, I believe so. 89
Eight?
Or 90 was an album called Under the Red Sky, which did not sell.
Well, he's done a couple of folk albums since then that were old songs.
You love those records, Chris. Have you ever listened to them lately?
Those are not Dylan records, though. I mean, you know, they're not those records you're speaking of that are about in the last couple of years are not his material.
No, they're cover songs of old numbers.
That's right, and he likes that kind of stuff a lot. I know that he likes to play those things live when you see him, but he's the predominant American writer of the 20th century, in my opinion, as a songwriter. And to just sit around and not write anything else is disturbing.
Well, the kids in record stores have told me he's got a couple of records in the can that he just hasn't put out yet.
Well, that would be great. He's also there's supposed to be a release of another bootleg series on CBS.
Uh-huh.
It was a box set of unreleased material a few years ago that was really, really great. And supposedly there's another one of those that's supposed to be released, including live shows from the 60s with the band. So, but they've been talking about that for years, too. So he's a, what, how the movie say it, a mystery wrapped in an enigma, surrounded by a cookie or whatever.
Something
but
like that.
That's the one. Joe Pesci said it better than me.
Thanks, Glenn.
Hey, you're welcome.
Talk to you later.
Okay, have a nice night.
You too, buddy. Phone lines are open, 749-1444. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Talking about Bob Dylan and talking about raw meat in just a minute.
Is it all Bob Dylan all night? Is
no.
this the deal? Is
raw
it Bob
meat
Dylan
too.
Night tonight?
We're going to get into raw meat in a little bit.
About him because he makes you doubt, because he has denied himself the things that you can't live without. Laugh at him behind his back just like the others do. Remind him of what he used to be when he comes walking through. There's the property of Jesus. We send him through the ball.
From the album Shot of Love, Property of Jesus by Bob Dylan, featuring an all-star cast of New York session cats. Who was that name of that guitar player you were asking me about?
Danny Kortzmar. I think he played on Billy Joel, 52nd Street, and Glass Houses, and Stranger and stuff.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Phone number is 749-1444, and I want to ask you something, Rob. Would you like to buy more than 1 million pounds of ground beef every week from a Nebraska processing plant that has been linked to a contamination scare of E. coli?
No, I wouldn't.
Why not?
Just doesn't sound like a thing I'd be into at this point in my life, man.
In case you haven't been reading Time or Newsweek, Hudson Foods, Inc. of Little Rock, Arkansas, and Nebraska, and that area out there, has been found to have E. coli in some of their beef, and Burger King, who does half their business with them, has fired them as their beef supplier. Now they got over 1 million pounds of beef every week that they need to get rid of. What are they going to do with all that raw meat? Any suggestions, Bart?
Well, you know, some people use raw meat as sort of body deodorant.
You mean like that fat person in that movie, what was that movie, Pink Flamingos?
Yeah, Divine.
Divine put the raw meat in between her legs?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that was to stop the crotchy stinky.
Mmm, well Bart, you called us. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I had a couple things to say. I had a little bit more tidbit of information about T-Bone Burnett and where his Christianity comes from.
Well, T-Bone Burnett goes back a lot farther than most people think.
Right. Well, he's married, or at least at one point was married to Sam Phillips, the female singer.
And she started as a gospel singer.
Named Leslie Phillips. Before she changed her name to Sam, after the Motown guy.
That's the Sun Records guy.
Yeah, same thing, you know. And she was Leslie Phillips. She was Christian rock.
She's very cute, by the way.
Yeah, and I also had to say, you know, I don't think Glenn was giving Bob a fair shake earlier when he was insinuating to me that he thought that Bob owed his fans something or owed a better explanation for his songwriting or what his songs are about or why he writes. And he says, I don't know, you know, the songs just come out of me. I don't have any, you know, thing to say about them, you know. I think that's totally right on because, you know, I've written a song or two myself and haven't had a lot of success, but I've had a little bit of success, and I totally can see where he's coming from by saying something like that. So, you know, I think Glenn is like a, you know, a fan with a, you know, with a more than slight attraction towards Bob Dylan, to one of those fans that feels that like the guy owes him something because he's such a big fan.
You think he has some preconceived notions of what Dylan is supposed to and not supposed to do when he performs?
I think he's kind of treating Bob like a, you know, like a girlfriend or something.
Oh, yeah? That's called cathexis.
Well, I think Bob could come up with something a little bit better than that tired old, oh man, the songs are just all out there and they just happen to come through me routine.
Maybe you didn't feel like talking about it. You know, I mean, it's like a lot of painters don't like to talk about their paintings. You know?
Well, if you're going to be a commercial artist and do artistic work that you hope to sell in quantities of hundreds of thousands or millions, you're going to do promotion for that work, and you're going to do interviews, and people are not going to ask you what your favorite color is. They're going to ask you, hey, how about this song, your first single off the new album?
Sure,
what's that one about? And if you say, oh, man, I don't know, it just came to me one night when I was sitting in a dark cave.
Yeah, so you make for a boring interview, but you might be telling the truth, you know. Or especially a guy in Dylan's case. What does he have to prove? He doesn't have to do another interview from now until the day he dies, and it's not going to make him gain or lose any popularity.
Well, you tell me something, Bart, since you fancy yourself a songwriter of sorts. What do you think that a commercial artist, whether he's a musician or a painter, and I'm not talking about the underground artistic New York types, but a commercial artist who's expecting to sell millions of quantities of their product, what do they owe their fans and their listening or viewing audience?
A good show.
But no explanation for their work?
No, not at all. Biggest mess.
Okay, well, we'll worry about this with the next call. Thanks, Bart.
Sure, man.
That was Bart. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, 749-1444, and I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob. I like it when guys talk about their work.
I think that to a certain extent, an artist owes at least a shallow explanation for their work.
But doesn't Dylan think, he probably, and he's not the only one, I think that it's cool when people try to figure out who Positively 4th Street was written for. Was it really written for Phil Oakes, or maybe it wasn't written for, maybe it was written about somebody else, you know?
That's where he says, you got a lot of nerve to say you are my friend.
Right. Because people try to figure out, who was that written about, you know? And he could easily say, yeah, Phil Oakes screwed me one time, repeatedly, so I wrote this really nasty song about him. But he won't come out and say that.
Hello, Holly, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is only about the third time I've listened to you guys, and I'm not Nan, but I'm not far off. I'm 41.
You don't have like a stinky daughter who's trying to get married way too young, do you?
No, and I think you guys are really cool, but you better think about affecting a little respect in your voice when you're talking about Mr. Dylan, because you're pissing me off.
Well, how's that? We got nothing but respect for the great sage
of the
60s.
Which one of you boys said that you didn't like Watching the River?
That was me. That was Rob. I don't like that song.
What was the last song you wrote? I missed it.
Do what?
Well, I missed your last song that you wrote.
Well, just because I don't write songs doesn't mean I can't criticize songwriters.
Show a little respect. And before I go to bed, which has to be soon because I'm old, I'm on my way home from work in the car.
Okay, good.
Play something from Planet Waves for me, will you?
Well, I'll get that right on, but I want to ask you something, Holly.
Yeah.
I'm a big Bob Dylan fan, and I think the guy can almost do no wrong, but you know what?
What?
He did a record called Street Legal that sucks. And he's done a lot of records that are golden. He's done a lot of records that are absolutely brilliant, but Under the Red Sky blows. You know
where
I'm coming from?
As good as you've been to me.
That's a decent record. You know, that's all right.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, no matter who the artists are, you know, even the Beatles came close to sucking occasionally. They did a thing called Maxwell Silver Hammer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right.
So even the most brilliant can screw up now and then.
I'm hard on you boys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Rob's not allowed to. He's allowed to not like that song if he wants.
That's true.
He's allowed to like and not like whatever he likes.
You're absolutely right.
Controversy's good for talk radio, isn't it?
I was wrong. Blood on the Track. There wasn't a bad song on that album.
Well, you got a good point there. I think that's a pretty damn good record.
My husband and I had the wedding song from Planet Waves played at our wedding.
Wow.
Long time ago.
Is Blood on the Track's the one with the sun was shining, you were laying in bed and all that on it?
Tangled up
in Blue.
Lily Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts.
Yeah, okay. That's a good record.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot, Holly.
Rock on.
Okay, you rock on too.
more than ever, more than time and more than love. I love you more than money and more than the stars above. I love you more than madness, more than dreams upon the sea. I love you more than life itself, you mean that much to me. Ever since you walked right in, the circle's been complete. I say goodbye to haunted rooms and faces in the street. In the courtyards of the jester, which is hidden from the sun. I love you more than ever, and I haven't yet begun. You breathed on me and made my life a richer one to live. When I was deep in poverty, you taught me how to give. Back the tears up from my dreams, they pulled me from the hole. I love you more than ever, and it binds me to the soul. Me, babies, one, two, three, what is more, you saved my life. Eye for eye and tooth for tooth, your love cuts like a knife. The thoughts of you don't ever rest, they kill me if I lie. But I'd sacrifice the world for you to watch my senses die. That is yours and mine to play upon this earth. We'll play it out the best we know, whatever it is worth. What's lost is lost, we can't regain what went down in the flood. And the happiness to me is you, and I love you more than blood. It's never been my duty to remake the world at large, nor is it my intentions to sound a battle charge. Cause I love you more than all of that, with a love that doesn't bend. And if there is eternity, I'll love you there again. Can't you see that you were born to stand by my side? And I was born to be with you, you were born to be my bride. You're the other half of what I am, you're the missing piece. And I love you more than ever, with that love that doesn't cease. You turn the tide on me each day and teach my eyes to see. Just being next to you is a natural thing for me. And I could never let you go, no matter what goes on. Cause I love you more than ever now that the past is gone.
I don't know how long you've been married, Holly, but happy anniversary to you or whatever to Holly and Mr. Holly. I bet you were impressed we got that on so quick. This is the Chris and Rob late night
you talk
show.
You sure were. You were very impressed with your abilities.
EBN wouldn't have done that. Neither would have the Fox. They wouldn't have done that. But we do that here at the mighty WAIF because we can and because we care. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Holly.
In today's world, it's important to start early in talking with your kids about sensitive, hard-to-discuss issues like sex and sexuality. Drugs and alcohol, violence, and AIDS. Call 1-800-CHILD-44, 1-800-CHILD-44. for a free practical guidebook in communicating with kids.
Well, do they have a guidebook for communicating with your co-host?
I have no
idea.
If
they had one, I could use one of those.
Yeah, I bet you could.
Hey, we were talking a minute ago about...
We were talking about Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan's career and whether or not you can like or not like a song, whether or not it's by a brilliant artist. And opinions, I think, are about as common as assholes when it comes to everybody having one. You've heard of Don Imus, the very popular talk show host from New York City, who has recently called Harold J. Rothwax, who is a judge from New York, a senile old dirtbag. He called him a drunk. He called him Judge Scuzzwax. And Don Imus also added to the list of insults of Harold J. Rothwax, a judge who is an embittered old fool enjoying all the fruits of a failed and not all too distinguished judicial career. It all started last September when this Judge Rothwax refused to let Don Imus' wife off of a jury. Now, my question to you is, Rob, why Harold Rothwax is now suing Don Imus for $50,000 plus for libel. Is it libel or libel?
It's libel, and I don't think Rothwax has a leg to stand on.
You know, are any of these things libel, or are they all opinion? Because there's a difference between libel and opinion. You've heard me say on the radio that Phil Heimlich is a fool, he's an idiot, he has no business on city council, let alone running for mayor, and everyone should not vote for Phil Heimlich when the mayoral election comes up in a few months. Guy's a creep. He's a cretin, and he's got legislative ideas that are downright scary.
Well, Don Imus is supposed to be a humor show that'll all fall under the category of satire.
Kind of like when Larry Flint and that preacher guy, what was his name?
Jerry Falwell.
Went to the Supreme Court.
I don't know that'll go under
the same category?
I don't know.
Chris and Rob, Late Night Talk Show, 749-1444 is the phone number.
Hi, Ken.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine.
Welcome to Chris and Rob.
Thank you. This is one of the first times I've heard your show, and I hope my comments are worthwhile.
Well, we hope so too, Ken.
I'm 43, and Bob Dylan's first few albums transformed me as far as being a songwriter myself.
You're talking about like the Freewheelin' Bob Dylan and all that real old stuff?
Yeah, that was his best stuff. And
now, wait a minute. His early stuff certainly was good, creative, from the heart. But how can you say that it was his best stuff? Some of his best material, in some other people's opinions, perhaps came out in the early 70s.
Well, I'll just say Bringing It All Back Home was his best album, far and above.
What about that Blood on the Tracks
record? That was good, but it wasn't as good as Bringing It All Back Home.
Ken?
I just felt like after a while he got... His voice fell off several notches, and his sound became too cluttered, you know, the production of it. And I didn't like him when he put down Donovan. I became a Donovan fan.
What did he say about Donovan?
Oh, in Don't Look Back, he ridiculed Donovan in his tour in England, and I always felt he knew that Donovan had a better voice and could play the guitar better, and was kind of condescending to him.
Yeah, but in that scene, that's a classic scene, though, when all throughout Don't Look Back, which is a documentary filmed in Cinema Verite, that's like a home movie style, and it's black and white. It's Dylan's last acoustic tour, which happens to take place in England. So Dylan's going all across the UK, and everywhere he turns, he hears about this up-and-coming Welsh Bob Dylan Scottish Bob Dylan that goes by the name Donovan, and everywhere he goes, it was like, hey, Bob, you've heard about this Scottish guy named Donovan? He's really good. He does the same thing you do, and he's really good. He's really good. And then the big moment comes.
Yeah.
And Donovan does a song, and it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then Dylan does It's All Over Now, Baby Blue. And the whole room was just like, oh, my God. I mean, because it was like the work of somebody who's talented and then the work of someone who's just otherworldly genius.
Wait a minute. Donovan was 18 at the time.
Donovan did a decent little song, and then Dylan was
25.
Then Dylan did It's All Over Now, Baby Blue.
By the time Donovan was 25,
Atlantis.
If you look at Sunshine Superman, Donovan, with John Cameron, British producer, he introduced the sitar and the Eastern sounds to rock and roll. He was much more innovative than Dylan in his middle albums. and Mellow Yellow. You listen.
Okay, to was Dylan innovative, or was Donovan innovative, or was he just a great reflection of what was going on around him?
He was the quintessential peacenik. You know, he was. If anybody dreamed of world peace, it was most accurately reflected in his approach to music.
Now, I always heard that Donovan was a great guy to take his music from the 60s, and if you wanted to introduce somebody from the 60s and say, listen, here's every fad that happened in the 60s. Listen to this Donovan record, it's the folk fad. Listen to this one, it's the Eastern music fad. Listen to this one, it's the acid rock fad. Because Donovan just embraced every half-baked fad that came out in the 60s.
I'll tell you something. Comparing Donovan to Bob Dylan is like comparing a mandarin orange to a grapefruit. A mandarin orange is definitely a very tasty little fruit, but it ain't a meal. A grapefruit is a meal, especially with a little powdered sugar on it.
Yeah, grapefruit's
that's breakfast right there, brother.
No, I don't agree with you, because Donovan's voice and his musicianship all around, he might not be as literate a poet when you get to comparing with, you know, T.S. Eliot and Ezra Pound all around, but he approaches Bob Dylan in the poetic aspect.
Oh, no and way. Mellow Yellow and Jennifer Juniper and...
No, you're not familiar with Donovan's album work, like Gift from a Flower to a Garden, HMS Donovan. It's just him on the guitar.
And if you've got a groovy shirt that you really like, something you feel real groovy in?
Epistle to Daryl. See, most of his best songs were not hits. You know, they were obscure album releases that he used those mass appeal songs to put over a more literate.
Well, Ken, you got me there, because I'll be the first to confess that I cannot discuss intelligently obscure Donovan tracks.
But they weren't really obscure for a person that was an album-oriented person. A Gift from a Flower to a Garden was a best-selling album. It just happens that the singles from it, it was a double album. The singles from it, Wear Your Love Like Heaven, were kind of the mass appeal songs, and the more literate, I would even approaching Shakespearean songs, were to a person that wasn't into album rock, obscure. But
I like that song, Wear Your Love Like Heaven. That's a nice song, but I'll tell you something. Comparing Donovan to Bob Dylan, it's the minor leagues, man.
I bet Donovan, I think you could safely say Donovan has a better singing voice than Bob Dylan.
And he's also a better guitar player.
Dylan's a pretty good guitar player.
I don't know about singing voice, but Dylan has an impassioned voice. When Dylan's really getting into it, he gets into it, and he doesn't let you forget about it.
Oh, yeah, but like, there were years where going to his concerts were kind of farcical because he mumbled all it. Believe me, Donovan never put on years of farcical concerts, you know, mumbling into the microphone song after song.
What was that?
Where was Donovan from 72 until 89?
Well, he was reclusive, but he came out on tour.
I got to stop you here, Ken. Isn't Bob Dylan, doesn't Donovan have a kid who's now like a big-time rocker?
Yeah, but he didn't raise that kid.
Yeah, well, is that Nancy Boy? Is he in the band Nancy Boy?
Yeah. Okay. But that was by a girlfriend that he didn't marry, and he left her shortly after the kid was born.
Got any kids, Donovan?
And it is glam rock, and I sure...
Well, did Dylan have anything to do with the raising of young Jacob Dylan, or was that all Sarah's business?
That I don't know. Donovan remarried another lady and brought up his own kids by her. And Donovan Leach, you're talking about, was not really influenced because, as I understand, the mother refused to let him see his real father because there was bitterness in the split.
Well, where's Marion Faithful tie into all this? Because she ties into all 60s rockers.
Joan Baez does, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Baez even has an anthology out where she kind of makes fun of Donovan for saying that he was going to be as big as Bob Dylan, but I noticed she had six or seven Donovan songs in her anthology.
Well, Donovan ever say he was going to be as big as Dylan, or was that just like a product of the hype machine? Like, I don't remember the Knack ever saying they were going to be as big as the Beatles, but like all these, all the people around
Tiger
them
Beat,
said that.
Between 1965 and 1970, Donovan sold more records than Bob Dylan.
Ooh.
He also, now this is little known.
Dylan was laid up, and then he released that triple album and all that weird stuff.
He also had, Bob Dylan never had, despite his reputation, he never had a Vietnam War protest song on the charts, Donovan had Buffy St. Marie's Universal Soldier, just him on the guitar. Bob Dylan never had a hit where he was acoustic, just him on the guitar. Donovan had his first four hits were pure folk songs.
Blowing in the Wind was never a hit for Dylan?
No. Peter, Paul, and Mary, I believe.
What about It Ain't Me, Babe was never a hit for Dylan?
I don't know. They got the charts. I got the charts in the back of this book.
No, I don't believe he ever released that as a single. The Turtles had that.
Oh, okay. Well, you may be right.
Yeah, so that's you know, it says something there. By the time they played those singles, Dylan had already switched to folk rock, and it had left kind of the pure acoustic sound behind.
So I don't know what the charts really tell you anything.
Listen to Sutras. Have any of you guys heard Sutras?
Here we
yet?
Go. 1965, Like a Rolling Stone was number two.
Yeah, but that's got keyboards and stuff all over it.
Yeah, that's after the big change.
Well, I don't see Donovan on here either, man.
That's 65.
Yeah, I don't see Donovan on the top 40 in 64 or 63. I'll look again.
65,
knucklehead.
I don't see Donovan on here either. Number eight is Positively 4th Street is number eight.
Really? That song was that big?
Catch the Wind was his first hit. It made about 16 on the charts.
Well, this is like the year-end charts, I think.
It made two on the British chart. Remember, British music was real big, so you got to use the British charts, too.
There, and number 14 in 66 was I Want You by Dylan.
Mm-hmm. But that wasn't pure folk. It was a good sound, but it was definitely folk rock.
All right, Ken, I see that you're an undying Donovan fan, and there's no swaying you, so I'm not even going
to
try.
Listen to Sutras. It just came out a few months ago.
I heard it was good. We've not picked one up yet.
It's Donovan's big comeback album.
Yeah, on American Recordings record label, right?
Yeah.
Rick Rubin's label? Donovan's on Rick Rubin's label?
Rick Rubin got a hold of Donovan now.
Good yeah, you ask where he's
been. First Danzig, you know, then Johnny Cash, then Donovan.
Until Rick Rubin, the major companies wouldn't give him a contract. And, you know, they decided Donovan was out, and... He said, I'm not going to stoop to recording for little labels.
Hey, what's wrong with that? Graham Parker's doing it. Nick Lowe's doing it. They're all recording for small labels, and they're making great records. Marshall Crenshaw's doing it. Donovan's so great. The
Cheap
Scottish
Trick
Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Cheap Trick's doing it. Alex Chilton's doing it. A bunch of great guys are doing it. John Prine's doing it.
Hey, he waited for a guy like Rick Rubin, and he made the right decision.
You know, some people would say that John Prine's best work is easily as good as anything Dylan did or Donovan.
John Prine is about as good as Dylan, but his voice also is limited.
Years of cigars and cigarettes have taken
limited
away
is the wrong choice of words, my friend.
And his guitar work is limited, too. He's a good guitarist, but not a virtuoso.
Bob Dylan and John Prine both are not limited.
As musicians, they are.
No, they're not. I'm going to let you go on that note,
okay,
Ken.
Okay, I appreciate you letting me sound off.
Anytime you want, baby.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, 749-1444 is the phone number. Give us a call. We're right here. The Christian Coalition is hoping to influence Congress's fall agenda. Did you know that?
I didn't know exactly, but I just assumed that they are a political action committee, so I figured that would be what they were doing. I didn't think they would be trying to get a Bob Dylan Day proclaimed or anything.
The Christian Coalition is urging lawmakers to fight religious persecution worldwide.
Yeah, they should do that. Yeah, that's a thing like some Christians are pushing, like Amnesty International and these liberal organizations. Why don't you guys denounce the African and Arabic nations that are torturing Christians, and Amnesty International and these human rights organizations are being really hesitant about jumping on that bandwagon?
My question to the Christian Coalition is, yeah, that's great because I abhor persecution of religion, religious freedoms on any ground, but are these guys also going to fight for the persecution of religions other than Christianity? I don't think that they would be behind that. The Freedom of Religious Persecution Act, which is something that the Christian Coalition hopes to see, would create a White House office for reporting religious persecution worldwide and impose sanctions on foreign governments that carry out religious persecution and improve asylum procedures. This has something to do with Clinton and China, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, that's the deal. Is they're sick, and I think a lot of people are sick of what Americans term as just blatant, basic human rights violations, like persecuting someone for their religion. And if you call the country on it, if you say something nasty about the Chinese for hanging Christians or hanging Muslims or hanging whatever it is not the main religion of China, you're called ethnocentric, or you just don't understand the Asian way.
What about the persecution of Muslims and Islam and Hindus and those cats over in Tibet? How about those cats over there on the Tibetan Plateau?
Exactly.
What about them?
They're yeah, exactly. Christian. Well, and so you
would
just...
Would the coalition stand behind them? Maybe
how do you know they wouldn't?
I don't know.
How do you know they wouldn't?
I don't know.
How do you know they wouldn't?
That's the question
how do you know they
I
wouldn't?
Posed to tonight's audience.
How do you know
audience.
They wouldn't?
749-1444 if you know more about the Christian coalition than me. And whatever happened to Ralph Reed? They got this
guy. He resigned. Ralph Reed resigned to take another job.
So who's this bald guy named Don Hodel?
I have no idea who he is.
And what job did he take?
I don't know. He's got another job similar to what he was doing.
Doing what?
Similar to what he was doing, being like a figurehead. He took this horrible little mismanaged organization from Jerry Falwell had, and he turned it into Pat Robertson. He turned it into the most powerful political action committee in the country. I think Ralph Reed has some pretty good political and organizational skill.
Making a buck somewhere.
I'm saying if I had a political action committee, if I had an agenda, and I could get Ralph Reed to be my point man, I would hire him in a heartbeat. Who's this? Dewey.
Hello, Dewey.
Well, how are you tonight?
Oh, my God.
Fabulous, Dewey. And yourself?
I'm sorry. You know, I had to go puke in my toilet when I heard that Donovan...
Okay, hold on a second, Dewey.
Hold on, Dewey. Huh?
The Cincinnati Railroad Club Incorporated is located at the Museum Center and Union Terminal. The club meets the third Sunday of each month. For more information, call 651-7245. 651-7245. Dewey, please continue now with this scintillating conversation about your damn bodily functions.
Well, hey, Dewey, do you have any model railroad in your basement?
First of all, Bob Dylan is Mr. 1960.
Back, he's like what you want to, you know what I call him?
What?
I call him a boss hog politicker.
Well, Bob Dylan wrote songs that other people made hits. He was a songwriter. One of his songs, like Mr. Tambourine Man,
The Birds,
made it to the top of the charts. So Bob Dylan, first of all, we recognize in the 60s as a giant in songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Blowing in the Wind was made a hit by other people.
Mm-hmm.
That man said that Bob Dylan never wrote an anti-war song.
No. He said he never had an anti-war song
he
on the charts.
Did.
He said who?
He certainly did.
Okay, what song?
He has never heard Bob Dylan's 115th Dream. Now, Bob Dylan was as much an anti-war writer.
But was that a hit? That's the one on Bringing It All Back Home where
absolutely.
He starts off and then he starts laughing, so he starts a song again?
Sure, and it's a protest song.
But Bob, I don't know if that was ever a hit, though. That's his point, Dewey.
Well, he was a protest writer. Mm-hmm. But remember, Bob Dylan, first of all, was a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote songs that other people made hits. He was a lot like Carole King. Of the 60s. Dylan, the thing that grabs you about Bob Dylan, and I love Bob Dylan, that's one man that came out of the 60s that I will always remember. It's that haunting harmonica and that haunting voice of his folk musical talent that reaches into the depths of your soul. You remember Bob Dylan when you hear him sing and play. You forget Donovan when you hear him because he's nothing but a British punk that can't sing.
You hear that, Ken?
Yeah, Ken.
Now, nobody remembers Donovan. He might.
Hey, Dewey, I want to ask you something. What's your opinion of Bob Dylan going to the World Eucharistic Congress in Bologna, Italy, to perform for the Pope Jean-Paul de Deuces?
Well, first of all, I never said that Bob Dylan wasn't wild about some of the things that he chooses to do in his life.
Mm. Well, Bob Dylan is a Jewish cat. He was saved for a while there in the 70s. Perhaps he still is, but that's more of a Protestant, Baptist sort of thing. Or I'm not sure if it was Baptist or what, but it was definitely a Protestant as opposed to a Catholic situation he had there. He was baptized, and he was saved, and he found Jesus and all that.
Can I say something about his spirituality?
That's what I'm asking you about, Dewey.
Okay, now I'm not going to deal with the specifics of Bob Dylan's conversion that other gentleman might think that he knows about.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that made Bob Dylan's poetry, another thing, his poetry, interesting, like Lay, Lady, Lay, Lay, Lay Across My Big Brass Bed.
Oh,
those songs those songs have a deeper universal meaning than just the surface lyrics, and it's a challenge to understand Bob Dylan's universality, his spirituality in his songs. Blowing in the Wind has a universal message. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say that Bob Dylan was converted in 1978 when his songs in the 60s have much of a spiritual nature than to them than anything that he wrote in the 70s. We wanted to understand what Bob Dylan was trying to say to us. What is it about you, Bob Dylan, that reaches into the our souls with your voice, with your harmonica, with your beautiful poetry? What are you trying to say to us, Bob? Well, Bob would always say to us, I speak to whatever you want me to, what you want to understand about me. He always left that door open for us to understand him.
You know, before he officially became a Christian, Bob Dylan featured many biblical ideas, ideologies, and characters in his songs, such as Abraham. Remember, God said to Abraham, kill me a son, and Highway 61 Revisited.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I could go down a huge list I've got here. He was mentioning Jesus and Judas in Masters of War, Eli in The Wicked Messenger, Delilah in the Tombstone Blues. Mm-hmm. You might remember Cain and Abel from Desolation Row, mm-hmm. or Jezebel was in Tombstone Blues.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a spirituality in a song like Don't Think Twice, It's All Right.
There's the Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest in that song with God on our side.
Sure. So we try to understand Bob Dylan, but we never are quite able to fully understand what he's saying to us, and that's the challenge in understanding his poetry. He is a tremendous poet. He wrote beautiful lyrics to his songs. Donovan will never be able to write like Bob Dylan did.
Not that deep. I mean, Donovan's all right, but he ain't no deep thinker.
Well, he's what we call a transcendental meditationist.
What's that mean?
Well, he sits around in his little yoga room and meditates, and then comes up with some kind of ridiculous song, bubblegum type song, that doesn't go anywhere and doesn't do anything for anybody except that guy that was talking about.
Well,
about
Dewey, are you familiar with the album tracks that Ken was speaking about, or are you only familiar with the big giant Donovan hits?
Well, I'm only familiar with what Donovan was, what the radio station played that Donovan managed to get played on the radio, and I can guarantee you the number of songs that Donovan had played in America during the 60s was not even near what Bob Dylan was doing. Bob Dylan influenced music in the 60s more than the Beatles.
Well, he influenced Donovan.
Oh, my goodness. Bob Dylan is Mr. 1960s. This man reached into the depth of society with his music. He is probably one of the better things that came out of the 1960s. His poetry, that haunting voice, that harmonica, will go down into rock and roll history. This man should be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
He's already there.
Well,
and
he's there for a reason.
Thanks, Dewey.
You bet.
Chris and Rob, Late Night Talk Show.
It's between Bob Dylan and Peter Tork.
Oh, you think that's where the real argument lies?
Yeah, as the essential 60s artist. WAIF, Cincinnati. We're talking Bob Dylan. We didn't know there were so many impassioned Dylan lovers and haters out there.
Every Wednesday night, there's this thing called the Madstract Show.
Ooh, yeah.
Right here on WAIF. Wednesday night, from 2 a.m. until 5 a.m.